This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. Hello and welcome. I'm Natalie Pinchem, and I will be reading synopses of some of the articles published by the Journal of Neurosurgery on July 4th, 2014. The topics of the articles featured in this podcast are vascular disorders, traumatic brain injury, the skull base, anatomy, surgical technique, and oncology. Radiographic absence of the posterior communicating arteries and the prediction of cognitive dysfunction after carotid endarterectomy. A clinical article by Eric Sussman and colleagues. These authors from the Neurosurgery and Anesthesia departments at Columbia University have been working for more than two decades to identify factors that increase the risk of cognitive dysfunction following carotid endarterectomy. It has been suggested that inadequate collateral circulation may lead to cerebral hypoperfusion during cross-clamping, resulting in early cognitive deficit after surgery. In this study, the authors used preoperative MR angiography, or CT angiography, to assess the integrity of the circle of Willis. They stratified patients by radiographic visualization of at least one posterior communicating artery versus no posterior communicating arteries. All patients underwent a battery of neuropsychometric testing immediately prior to and one day after surgery. Data in 38 patients were analyzed and demonstrated that 23.7% of patients overall exhibited early cognitive decline, a percentage consistent with prior studies. In the final multivariate logistic regression model, radiographic absence of both posterior communicating arteries was the only independent predictor of early cognitive decline. Although the causes of neurocognitive decline following carotid endarterectomy are certainly multifactorial, this finding provides strong support for an underlying ischemic etiology. Predictors of outcome in civilians with gunshot wounds to the head upon presentation. A clinical article by Loyola Véronique Gresso and co-authors. Gunshot wounds to the head remain a potentially devastating injury, with many patients dying of their injuries or surviving with catastrophic neurological injury despite aggressive medical and surgical therapy. How does one counsel the families of patients sustaining a gunshot wound to the head? How can one determine the prognosis when confronted with a critically injured patient in a trauma bay? How does one identify and differentiate patients who have potential for meaningful recovery from those unlikely to survive, regardless of treatment? With these questions in mind, the authors reviewed their series of 119 patients who sustained a gunshot wound to the brain to report survival and functional outcome, to identify prognostic factors, and to propose a scoring system that can predict their likely outcomes at the time of presentation. The authors advocate assessing patients based on these parameters rather than pronouncing a poor prognosis based upon low Glasgow Coma Scale score alone. Pneumocephalus patterns following endonasal endoscopic skull-base surgery as predictors of postoperative CSF leaks. A clinical article by Maite Banu and co-workers. The presence of postoperative pneumocephalus associated with serosanguinous nasal drainage may raise suspicion for a cerebrospinal fluid leak. The authors hypothesized that specific patterns of pneumocephalus on postoperative imaging could be predictive of a cerebrospinal fluid leak. 39.5% of patients demonstrated pneumocephalus on postoperative imaging. Patients with craniopharyngioma and meningioma had the highest incidence of postoperative pneumocephalus compared to patients with pituitary adenomas. The incidence of pneumocephalus was highest in patients who had undergone transcribriform or transethmoidal approaches compared to those who had undergone the transcellar approach. The incidence of postoperative cerebrospinal fluid leaks was 5.8%. Of the 15 patients with a postoperative cerebrospinal fluid leak, 66.7% had pneumocephalus. Pneumocephalus located in the convexity, interhemispheric fissure, or the cellar, paracellar, and perimesencephalic regions was significantly correlated with a postoperative cerebrospinal fluid leak. It was therefore termed suspicious pneumocephalus. In contrast, frontal or intraventricular pneumocephalus was not correlated with postoperative cerebrospinal fluid leaks. It was defined as benign pneumocephalus. The amount of convexity, interhemispheric, and paracellar pneumocephalus, determined using a scale score of 0 to 4, was significantly related to postoperative cerebrospinal fluid leaks. The authors conclude that postoperative pneumocephalus is much more common following extended approaches. However, merely the presence of pneumocephalus, particularly in the frontal or intraventricular location, is not necessarily associated with a postoperative cerebrospinal fluid leak. A suspicious pattern of air, namely pneumocephalus in the convexity, interhemispheric fissure, and cellar, paracellar, or perimesencephalic locations, is highly indicative of postoperative cerebrospinal fluid leaks. New endoscopic route to the temporal horn of the lateral ventricle. Surgical simulation and morphometric assessment. A laboratory investigation by Jose Juan Gonzalez Sanchez and colleagues. This study standardizes a new endoscopic approach to the temporal horn of the lateral ventricle. The study was divided into two parts. First, to determine the best and the only possible trajectory for complete endoscopic navigation of the temporal horn. The authors analyzed 50 cranial MRI studies, which comprised 100 temporal horns from healthy patients. Trajectory mean entry point coordinates were 2.7 plus or minus 0.28 centimeters lateral to the inion and 5.6 plus or minus 0.41 centimeters superior to the inion. The mean total distance from the ungual recess to the scalp was 10.64 plus or minus 0.6 centimeters. The mean total intraparenchymal distance crossed by the endoscope was 3.76 plus or minus 0.36 centimeters. Second, the authors conducted surgical simulation of the defined approach on 9 embalmed cadaver heads, which comprised 18 temporal horns. The approach was successfully completed for all specimens. They described and systemized the endoscopic surgical anatomy of the temporal horn. The morphometric analysis makes this approach anatomically feasible and replicable. The following strategies are essential for enabling access and maneuverability inside the temporal horn. Tailored preoperative planning of the trajectory and the use of anatomical and radiological references, constant irrigation, and an angled endoscopic lens. To advance this very promising route to temporal lobe pathology, safety assessment and novel instruments and techniques may be needed. Phase 1 or 2A trial of fractionated radiotherapy, temozolomide, and autologous formalin fixed tumor vaccine for newly diagnosed glioblastoma. A clinical article by Eishi Ishikawa and co-authors. Temozolomide may enhance anti-tumor immunity in patients with glioblastoma. The authors conducted a prospective phase 1 or 2A clinical trial of 60 gray fractionated radiotherapy concomitant with temozolomide treatment, followed by autologous formalin fixed tumor vaccine and temozolomide maintenance in patients with newly diagnosed glioblastoma. This treatment regimen was well tolerated by all 24 patients in the study. The percentage of patients with progression-free survival over 24 months was 33%. The median progression-free survival was 8.2 months. The median overall survival was 22.2 months. The actuarial 2-year survival rate of the 24 patients was 47%, and the 3-year survival rate was 38%. The median progression-free survival in patients with a delayed type hypersensitivity response of 10 millimeters or larger after the third vaccine injection was significantly longer than in patients with a smaller hypersensitivity response. The authors conclude that the treatment regimen was well tolerated and resulted in favorable outcomes for patients with newly diagnosed glioblastoma. Cell-mediated allergy to cerebral aneurysm clip causing extensive cerebral edema. A case report by Terence Tan and co-workers. The authors report the first case of a vasogenic cerebral edema due to a cell-mediated hypersensitivity reaction to a nickel-containing aneurysm clip. The patient had initially presented for elective clipping of a right middle cerebral artery aneurysm. On long-term follow-up, she demonstrated relapsing remitting cerebral edema. 4 years after aneurysm clipping, she underwent an exploratory craniotomy, given unsuccessful conservative management of her headaches and imaging evidence of cerebral edema with mass effect. During surgery, gross parenchymal edema and inflammatory nodules were observed. Histopathology was consistent with a cell-mediated or type 4 hypersensitivity reaction. Concerns regarding nickel allergy have often been reported in the cardiac literature. However, only one case of allergic dermatitis without cerebral edema has been described in a patient who underwent aneurysm clipping. The case featured in the present report highlights the possibility of nickel hypersensitivity when using nickel-containing aneurysm clips, especially in patients with known nickel allergies. Given that postoperative cerebral MRI is invariably performed, cerebral edema due to hypersensitivity reactions to nickel-containing aneurysm clips can be readily identified. As shown in this case, however, operative management via exchange of an aneurysm clip is not always feasible. Retrosigmoid removal of a small acoustic neuroma. Curative tumor removal with preservation of function. A clinical article by Iwao Yamakami and colleagues. The authors accomplished curative removal of small acoustic neuromas without long-term tumor recurrence and with excellent functional outcomes. They used sharp dissection for retrosigmoid removal of the tumors and intraoperative auditory monitoring of cochlear nerve compound action potentials and auditory brainstem responses. They performed this procedure for 44 consecutively enrolled patients who had small acoustic neuromas and preserved hearing. For all 44 patients, tumor removal was complete and no facial palsy, deaths, or other complications occurred. Postoperative preservation of serviceable hearing was achieved for 84% and useful hearing in 72% of patients. Reliable monitoring was achieved more frequently with cochlear nerve compound action potentials than with auditory brainstem responses. Consistently reliable auditory monitoring was significantly associated with better rates of preservation of useful hearing. Long-term follow-up by MR imaging showed no tumor recurrence. Although preserved hearing declined minimally during the long-term postoperative follow-up period, useful hearing and serviceable hearing remained at the same levels for 80% and 100% of patients, respectively. Because hearing decline is common during wait and scan and after radiosurgery, and is inevitable for patients with small acoustic neuromas, the first-line management strategy for younger patients with small acoustic neuromas and preserved hearing should be curative tumor removal with preservation of hearing and facial function. Thank you for listening. JNSPG podcast content is now contained in the American Association of Neurological Surgeons iTunes U site. Sign up in iTunes for our podcasts and additional content, including video content and podcasts from the AANS, all updated continuously. Comments on this podcast can be sent to jnspodcast@thejns.org. Thank you.